everybody. Welcome to Doug's History Lesson here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. I am, of course, your teacher for this evening, Professor Doug. My students in the classroom tonight are Eric.
What up?
And Stevie's here.
How are you?
Hey, how's it going?
We may have another student join us in a second, and then we had, of course, we did have a flake tonight. He's not here, so he's getting an absent mark on his attendance record, and next time I see him, he's getting my foot in his ass. fucking moron. All right, so tonight's history lesson is going to be on Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, if you couldn't tell because of the song. And Eric, I'm glad you got that. I was going to message you about that earlier, but I forgot.
No, I got it the other day, so I was already on it.
Yeah, well, good job.
Thank you.
So we'll get to the lesson in just a second, but first, make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Listen to us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, every Friday night for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Next Friday night, we'll be talking the WCW Great American Bash 1996. In 2 weeks, on June 25th, we're going to be talking Vengeance 2005. And we will have a big countdown coming up on July 16th. We will be counting down the top 10 greatest superstars to never win the WWF/WWE title.
Sweet.
Also, listen, now, this is the only show that we're doing this weekend because Daniel is, of course, out of town. So there will be no Saturday shows at all. But usually listen to us Saturday mornings. It might switch to the afternoon because Daniel's picking up some Saturday hours now starting next week. But for the Unscripted Limited show, which is going to be Daniel and I talk all a bunch of nerd stuff. And then, of course, Saturday nights will be, you know, whatever we feel like them being. Sundays, of course, listen to Mindy and Daniel on the Scaredy Cats. Of course, Mindy will be by herself on Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. So tonight and Sunday are the only shows. There will be no Saturday shows. I really didn't even want to do a show tonight, but Eric guilt tripped me into it.
I did?
You may have. I don't know. All right. So, Eric, where's the other student?
I think he was just finishing feeding his kids, so.
Oh, okay. All right. So, because this teacher waits for nobody, let's get started. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. Now, he won the poll. The poll was for WCW Mid-Carter. Now, he was in more than just, you know, WCW. He was in the WWF. He actually started his career in Memphis in Mid-Southern Wrestling in 1976. But before that, he actually was a running back at the University of Tampa in college. 21 career touchdowns and gained over 2,000 all-purpose yards in his playing career. And then he was a 12th round pick in the 1973 draft for the New Orleans Saints. But he failed to pass his physical for the NFL for the Saints. And then when he got signed to the Chiefs, he couldn't pass the physical. So he ended up playing in the World Football League for the Jacksonville Sharks. He was there for a year, but then he started training as a wrestler. But yeah, in 1976, he started in Mid-Southern Wrestling, which was actually Memphis. And then he started in Mid-South Wrestling, which back at the time was NWA Tri-State, back in 1978. And he started in a big feud with Ernie Ladd. So Paul Orndorff basically, he kind of starting in the mid-70s in Mid-South, which was, you know, back before it was known as Mid-South, when it was still known as NWA Tri-State, was still a huge territory at the time. And, you know, Orndorff was part of that. And then also, you know, but back in those times too, you could work for more than one territory, because back in those days, and I think I talked about it too when we did the show on Eddie Gilbert, you work in a territory for about 6 weeks, get over, but then your program ends, and then you have to move on to the next territory. Not too many guys back in the days lasted like lasted, you know, more than at least more than a year in a territory.
So basically that was in the 70s, right?
70s and even in the 80s too, because in the 80s, it was the same thing up until the end of the territories, really, was you go there, you get yourself over, you get in a big program, you work that program for a while, and then when the fans really start to lose interest, that's when it's like, okay, before you lose too much steam, let's send you somewhere or somewhere else. You go get over there for a while, but then, you know, they eventually would come back for the most part.
Right.
And of course, you know, Orndorff made a name for himself in the NWA as well. Also in 1979, he traveled to Alabama's Southeast Championship Wrestling. And, you know, teamed up with Dick Slater there. Of course, in 1980, he started to split his time between Alabama and Mid-South. But at the end of 1980, he actually left Alabama to focus just on Mid-South.
Oh, wow.
And actually, here's one of the funny things, and I noticed this because when Mid-South episodes got added to the former WWE Network, and I'm assuming they're going to come back eventually. At least I hope so, because I actually really like those. They started adding the episodes after, well, when they became Mid-South Wrestling, the episodes from the end of 1981. And at the end of 1981, Orndorff was actually like one of their top heels.
What?
Yeah. Well, he was a babyface for a while, but then he turned heel, and he was feuding with Ted DiBiase over the Mid-South North American title. He won it on July 4th, 1981. He lost it on November 1st, 1981 to DiBiase. And then I think it was like early 82 where Orndorff actually turned babyface again, because they ran this angle, and I remember actually watching this on TV. Or not on TV, on the network. Orndorff was supposed to get a rematch against Ted DiBiase for the title, and he had everything set up. You know, he was gonna, he actually paid Skandor Akbar, you know, to help him and all that, but he actually, he couldn't make the arena because of car trouble.
Oh, wow.
Bob Roop, who was his friend and ally at the time, actually took the match against DiBiase, but then Akbar and One Man Gang came out, and they still helped Bob Roop win the title. Well, then it turns out that Bob Roop actually sabotaged Orndorff's car, so Orndorff couldn't make it to the building so he could get the shot.
Oh, okay.
And then that became a big... Go ahead, Stevie.
So why would he do that, though? Do you know?
And it's all storyline, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So it's all storyline, and the storyline is Bob Roop wanted the shot. Paul Orndorff had himself a foolproof plan to win the title. Bob Roop figured, fuck Orndorff, I'm going to take the shot. So, he did what he did. And then when Orndorff came back, it started a feud between him and Roop, but he was never able to, regain the title. So therefore he actually left the territory. And I believe he actually left on bad terms.
Do you know what kind of bad terms they were?
Orndorff was never really one for not burning bridges. I think it was just basically him and Bill just kind of had a disagree either over money or whatever it was. And he's just like, okay, I'm going to leave.
Well, I mean, that would make a lot of sense.
Orndorff was never one for really, showing respect to a promoter. All right, so from then on, he went to Georgia Championship Wrestling, was feuding with Buzz Sawyer, the NWA national title. And then after that, he went to New Japan for a few months. But then, of course, in late 83, that's when he signed to the WWF. And there's a lot to get to there. But before we get there, does anybody have any questions yet?
How old was he when he first started?
Okay, so he started in 1976. He was about 27.
Okay, wow, he started a little late.
Well, remember, he was trying to play football.
Oh, that's right, yeah. What made him get into wrestling?
I think it was basically because, he lived in Tampa or he lived somewhere in Florida. And, in Florida, especially back in the 70s, Florida Championship Wrestling was the shit. So therefore, anybody that basically needed a job, it's like, okay, if you need a job, come to Florida and wrestle. And Eddie Graham basically took anybody off the street. So, yeah, I mean, basically Florida Championship Wrestling was so hot back then that, everybody wanted to be part of it.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
So, what made him decide to go to the WWF in 83?
Okay. Basically it was just because you gotta remember, back in late 83, and when he went in, it was about November. That was around the time where Vince McMahon Jr., he had bought the company from his father. And he decided, okay, I don't just want to be a territory. I want to be national. I want to be worldwide. I want all these other promoters to go fuck themselves. I want to be the man.
That sounds like Vince McMahon.
Exactly. So, that was his line of thinking. So he goes to the different territories and he plucks everybody he can. He did it to the AWA with Hogan, and then of course several guys after. After Starrcade was over with, Starrcade 83, he took Valentine, he took Piper.
He took Harley Race. Did he take Harley Race too?
Not yet. Not right away.
Okay.
Mid South, he took Bundy. Tito Santana went over. I mean, he took anybody and everybody that he could because he wanted to be the number one. And that's the thing. Everybody says, Vince just wanted to compete with everybody. No, he wanted to fight. He wanted to rule wrestling. He wanted to be the number one guy. And if that meant putting people out of business, then so be it. Right? It's what you have to do. Go ahead, Steve.
Great. It was basically a business decision.
Yeah. So, basically in business and, Eric, I think you and I are going to learn this eventually.
Yep.
In business, you can't really do what's popular. You can't really think of everybody's feelings. You have to make the best business decision that you feel is going to make you the most money.
Exactly.
Okay. And you can't do stuff like there is no being nice really in business. I mean, you can try that. And if it works for a while, great, but it won't work long term. So, unfortunately, Vince did what he had to do.
Yeah.
All right. So with Orndorff starting in, he took Roddy Piper on as his manager. And he actually, the same show that Hogan came in and won the WWF title from the Iron Sheik at Madison Square Garden on January 23rd, 1984, that's actually where Orndorff made his debut. Defeating Salvatore Bellomo. And, of course, Piper was his manager. Basically it was Piper and Orndorff. And then, Orton came around. And, it was the three of them. And, of course, everybody remembers WrestleMania 1, Piper and Orndorff versus Hogan and Mr. T. And, what an attraction that was. And Orndorff ended up taking a fall because Orndorff ended up taking a fall, I believe, because Piper did not want to, I don't think Piper really wanted to take the fall. So there was, of course, a falling out there. And then Orndorff started siding with Hogan, made him the biggest baby face in the world. Because, if you sided with Hulk Hogan back in the 80s in the WWF, fans were going to hear you no matter what.
They were not nicer back then, right?
Yeah. Well, no, back then the fans did what they were told. If the fans were told, hey, look, this is your good guy, this is your bad guy, the fans listened.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exactly.
So, they really didn't, they were kind of basically, a fan's job back then, and not necessarily so much now because, now they do what they want. Fans' job back then was, okay, if there's a baby face, you cheer the baby face and you boo the heel. And basically that's what you're supposed to do. And that's what, you know, a wrestling fan's job is. They didn't, but now, like, they don't do that because they want to have their own opinion.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that in theory, but also, too, when they're trying to get a babyface over, I mean, the fans are going to cheer for whoever they want to cheer for. But back then, like, they actually... John?
Hey, what's up, Doug?
Hey, John.
Hi, John.
How you doing, man? Hey, Eric.
Good.
What's up, buddy?
What up?
How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
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 That's good. Sorry for interrupting. Continue, sir.
Okay. All right, so we're in the middle of talking about Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. We're talking about his WWF run, which started in late 83. We're up at WrestleMania 1, right? All right, so after WrestleMania 1, Paul Orndorff then takes on or Paul Orndorff basically starts becoming Hulk Hogan's partner. He fires his manager, Bobby Heenan. And Orndorff and Hogan basically, they become almost like the best of friends. Now, of course, you know, a year later, after WrestleMania 2, when Orndorff took on the Magnificent Morocco in a match that was absolutely awful, the summer of 86 is when Paul Orndorff started kind of becoming jealous of Hogan. And so in so basically what happened there was people were mocking Orndorff, basically saying that Orndorff was Hulk Jr. and that Orndorff had gone soft because of Hogan. And basically they were kind of doubting Hulk and Orndorff's friendship, basically just calling Orndorff a lackey. So they said that they, Adrian Adonis, along with, I think, Bobby Heenan and members of the Bobby Heenan family, they basically said to Orndorff, well, prove how good of a friend Hogan, or, you know, prove how good of friends you and Hogan are and call him. So he calls Hulk at the gym, but he gets told by somebody at the gym that Hogan was too busy to come to the phone because he was training. And Orndorff goes, look, I don't care if he's busy or not. He needs to come to the phone. So they went and they told Hulk. They said, Hulk, hey, look, you know, this guy really wants to talk to you. And Hogan basically says, tell him I'll talk to him later. And Orndorff didn't like that. So they had a couple more matches where Orndorff basically worked the match by himself trying to upstage Hogan. And then they had this big tag match against Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. And Orndorff gets knocked off the apron. Hogan gets beat up. Orndorff doesn't go in the ring to help him. And then afterwards, Orndorff helps Hogan up, but then beats the crap out of him. And gives him a pile driver. So basically that turned Orndorff back into a heel. And then he took Bobby Heenan back on as his manager. He started using Hogan's theme. And you know, they had like it had to be about a 6 to 8 month program with one another, which included a match in Toronto at what was called the Big Event, which actually drew 76,000 fans. Which, by the way, is more than what WrestleMania 6 drew.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a good event. I saw that one.
Right. So.
I never saw that one.
It's basically on the network, the Big Event.
Yeah, I was going to say, it got switched over, right?
Yeah, it's on there. It got switched over.
Okay.
I'll have to check it out.
All right, so now after, you know, they had so many matches where there was no clear winner, they finally have this cage match on Saturday night's main event in January of 1987. And Hogan finally gets the win, finally ends it with Orndorff. So, you know, that ends that feud. But it was, of course, during the feud with Hogan that Orndorff actually injured his right arm while weightlifting. But because he was in the middle of the run with Hogan and he was making a lot of money, he didn't want to take off time to have the surgery. And then after the program with Hogan was over, he started working a lighter schedule before they actually forced him to take time off because of the injury.
That's interesting, actually.
So then he was off for a little bit, and then he actually returned in June of 87. But then that's when also Bobby Heenan started. Bobby Heenan brought in Ravishing Rick Rude to basically replace Rude as like the best built man in the Heenan family, the guy with the best body. And then, of course, in August of 87, Orndorff publicly fired Bobby Heenan again and took on Sir Oliver Humperdinck as his manager.
Why did he do that?
That's a great name.
Humperdinck?
Yeah.
All right, so Eric, to answer your question, he fired Heenan because Heenan basically had said that Ravishing Rick Rude had a better body than Paul Orndorff. And basically, Orndorff was going to be the new body guy. Well, Orndorff still felt like he had a better body than everybody else. So he said, you know what? You know, the hell with Heenan. I got this new guy as my manager, and he started working matches with Rude. He was at the first ever Survivor Series. And then after the Survivor Series in early 88, he actually retired for a little bit. Because of his arm injury, and actually started running a bowling alley in Fayetteville.
Really?
Yeah. And then while he was away from wrestling, it was actually reported that he died. And it made several newspapers.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. But
what did they say
he died of? I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So
why would they post that fake news?
There's celebrity hoaxes all the time nowadays.
All right.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. You get the fake news all the time now.
Yeah. So, you know, he was away, though, because his arm and his neck, you know, he had those problems that he suffered those injuries during the feud with Hogan, but he didn't want to take the time off to get him fixed. And because he was making too much money. But then it got to the point to where he had no choice.
Right.
So, all right. So before we get to his first WCW run, which was in 1990, does anybody have any questions for what we've talked about so far?
No,
I just
questions.
Find it really interesting that he was reported dead and he wasn't. Like, I don't even know how that was a thing.
Especially in the early 90s, especially in the late 80s, I have no idea.
Like, what, did he just show up again, like, and they're just like, oh, he's not dead?
Well, I guess he had found it, like, somebody had showed him a newspaper article saying, hey, look, you're dead. So I think he called the newspaper and said, no, I'm alive.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So
very interesting. I didn't realize that it was so much around the body back then too. Like, I mean, obviously if you look at it, that's what it was, but I guess that's how you got wrestling jobs, was by being a bodybuilder, I guess.
Being a bodybuilder, being a great, I mean, going to the WWF/WWE, yes. Like, they were more the bodies. The other territories back at that time, like the AWA territory in Minneapolis, you had to be like, you had to be kind of a college wrestler or a high school wrestler. You had to have an amateur wrestling background. If you worked in Bill Watts' Mid-South territory, you actually had to have a background in football.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Bill Watts brought in a lot of guys that played college football.
Who's the most famous guy that he brought in from college football? Do you know?
There's a lot of them. I know he brought in, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, they brought him in shortly after he got cut by the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he played football, too.
Yeah. Duggan played
football. Did he bring in Jesse the Body?
Huh?
Did he bring in Jesse the Body, Ben, sir?
No, Watts didn't know. Whatchamacallit? Vern Gagne brought in Jesse the Body. But
very interesting.
But yeah, that was basically how it went. In the Carolinas, in the Carolina territory, you had to be a good talker, a good promo guy, if you were going to succeed there.
That makes sense.
And you also had to, be able to go like 30 to 60 minutes.
Now I'm a little younger, Doug. So I grew up with the generation of like obviously The Rock and Stone Cold and The Undertaker. So it's just interesting to hear the difference between how you would become a wrestler, from the different decades.
Right. Yeah, and that's like, and that's the thing. And again, like I was, like I didn't really grow up in the era of like the 70s and 80s. I just happened to like do the research and all that. So like I kind of grew up, like I was born in 86. So.
Oh, okay. Born in 89. So we're similar then.
Yeah. But I just happen to know like a lot of this stuff because, I've been researching this stuff for so long.
Right.
So, and plus, I've talked to so many, older wrestlers that have also clued me in on exactly like, how things work.
Who's the most famous wrestler that that you've talked to?
The most famous wrestler that we've had on the show has to be Superstar Bill Dundee.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was on the show. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was back in January, right, Eric?
Yeah. I'll give you the link to the show, Don.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah. So, like, when we had him on, it was one of the things we kind of talked about, him getting in back then, because, when he started back in the 60s, it was more, and he started because he's from Australia. And it was easier to get back in because, back overseas, back in the days, you could actually start wrestling at like 15, 16 years old.
That's crazy.
Oh, wow.
So, the different territories and the different companies like back then, like they had like different requirements, like I said. And Vince's requirement basically was you had to have a good look. You had to have a good body because it was more about entertainment purposes for him. He didn't want you to be a good wrestler. He wanted you to be able to put on
to be able to entertain.
Yeah.
I got you.
So, all right. So in 1990, Orndorff makes his way over to WCW. And when he gets there, he becomes a member of a stable called the Dudes with Attitudes, which was actually led by Sting.
Really? Wow, I didn't know Sting
had
a stable like that.
Well, because basically he was trying to surround himself with guys that could help him fight off the Horsemen.
Ah, okay.
And what happened? Anyway, so the stable was Sting, Lex Luger, the Junkyard Dog, Paul Orndorff, and the Steiner Brothers.
Oh, interesting.
So, how long did that stable last for?
I'm pretty sure Orndorff was gone. Orndorff was gone by late August, so I'm pretty sure it was up until about August, because then like Sting and Luger were still kind of aligned with one another in the Steiner, because Sting, Luger, and the Steiner brothers were all friends.
Right.
All right, and JYD and Orndorff trying to get over with the fans.
Okay.
So, and at Clash of the Champions 11, Paul Orndorff actually defeated Arn Anderson, who was the TV champion at the time, but it was a non-title match. And that match, and I hope that they actually do bring the Clash of Champions specials back to the network, back to Peacock, or over to Peacock. They were on the old network, but now they haven't made their way over to Peacock yet. I hope they do soon, because this match is a really, really good match. And on a Clash of Champions show that was actually not that good, this was the best. This was the best match on the show.
Which Clash of Champions was it?
11.
Okay.
It was in June of 1990, Eric.
Okay.
Very interesting. I would have been 1 year old.
Wow. I would have been 4.
What? Oh.
So good amount of time. Interesting.
All right. So after he leaves in late 1990, Orndorff starts wrestling for the Universal Wrestling Federation, which was owned by Herb Abrams. And basically, that was Herb Abrams' attempt to kind of be, because Herb Abrams would bring in a lot of guys that used to work for Vince, but these were also guys that were, you know, kind of closing in towards the end of their careers.
Right.
And, but Orndorff started feuding with Dr. Death Steve Williams. And it was basically the feud that would kind of help put the UWF on the map, so to speak. But, so they had the matches, you know, they had some matches there, including a cage match, which actually, was on, if anybody has ever, watched anything on Pluto TV, they actually do have a pro wrestling channel on there. And some of the
wow.
stuff can be found on there.
Nice.
Do you know when the first cage match was, by any chance?
The first cage match?
Yeah.
I think cage matches go all the way back to the 1930s.
Oh, really? I thought it was a little more recent than that. I didn't realize that it was that long ago.
Well, because back in those early days, back when they really wanted you to think wrestling was real, the cages were actually made out of chicken wire.
They weren't made
wow.
out of fences?
Yeah, because the cage was supposed to cement, the cage match was supposed to cement the end of a blood feud.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, but in the 70s, didn't they go with a steel cyclone fence?
Yeah. Eventually, they went with this cyclone fence. But, yeah, when they started doing the cage matches in the 30s, the first cages were actually made out of chicken wire.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Have you ever watched any matches from the 30s, though?
I wouldn't be able to sit through them.
Yeah, I don't think I would either.
Yeah, I don't know if I could. But, I mean, I definitely would want to, honestly. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, it could be interesting. I just don't know, like, if it would be able to hold anybody's attention nowadays.
Yeah, with everything being so, it was so much different back then. It was a little slower pace.
Yeah. So, in 1992, he started working for Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He was there for a little while. He had matches against Ronnie Garvin and Hector Guerrero and Brian Lee. He was the partner of the Dirty White Boy, Tony Anthony. But then, of course, you know, he would leave there after being fired, you know, quote unquote, you know, in storyline after pile driving a referee. But basically, he went back to WCW in late 92. And this is where, like, yeah, his career kind of resurged. And obviously, you know, his WCW run, that's the reason why we're doing, you know, this episode, because he won the poll for being a WCW mid-carder. But, so in early 93, he actually started feuding with Cactus Jack.
Good old and, CJ.
Yeah. He started feuding with Cactus Jack, and it was basically that actually started Cactus Jack's babyface turn.
Wow.
And,
I can't picture Cactus Jack's babyface.
Well, it happened. And then they had, Cactus Jack and Paul Orndorff, go ahead, Stevie.
Did they have that match at Super Brawl 93?
Yeah, they had the False Count Anywhere match at Super Brawl 3, and Cactus Jack beat Orndorff after hitting him in the head with a shovel. Which, by the way, it was a snow shovel, so it wasn't, like, that bad. Well, and plus, you know, back then they actually did kind of, you know, they did kind of protect the guys back then, too. So then, in the spring of 93, Orndorff wins the vacant WCW television title by defeating Eric Watts in the finals of a tournament. And then he starts teaming with Rick Rude, who was the U.S. champion. They started teaming on a regular basis. While, and also Orndorff was, you know, still the television champion too, eventually losing the television title to Ricky Steamboat. And then in the fall of 93, his push started picking back up again when he started being managed by the masked assassin Jody Hamilton, and he also started teaming with Paul Orndorff. Or not Paul Orndorff, he is Paul Orndorff. He started teaming with Paul Roma, and they became pretty wonderful.
Is that why his nickname? Is that where his nickname comes from?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
They started knowing it. They, you know, well, I mean, Orndorff was known as Mr. Wonderful like way before, but he was Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. Paul Roma was pretty Paul Roma. So that's, so they just combined the names there, and that was the name of the team.
When did he get the name Mr. Wonderful? Or why did he even get that?
I'm pretty sure he just came up with it himself. It had a lot to do, I think, with the body.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Oh.
Was he the one that was singing the intro?
He was not
about himself.
Voice.
Okay, I was going to say, was he singing about himself?
Yeah, no, that is not his voice. Be impressive if it was, but it's not.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
For real.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Who was his biggest rival?
Like in general?
Yeah.
Hogan.
Even outside the ring, too? Or they weren't friends or anything?
I mean, they had kind of like a... I mean, they knew they had to do business together. I mean,
right.
To this day, I'm pretty sure Orndorff doesn't like Hogan because of the injuries that Orndorff suffered during the feud. But they were able to kind of get along.
Do you think you could ever get Mr. Wonderful himself onto the show?
It might. It would take a while, and it would take us building. It would take us to do a lot of building. Like, we'd have to really build this show to where, like, you know, we had such a mass audience to where guys like that would come on the show. I mean, I've met Paul Orndorff before.
Oh, okay.
Hey, nice guy.
Yeah, Eric, we met him at we didn't meet him at the convention. Or you weren't standing with me when I met him. You were actually standing in line to meet Shawn Michaels.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The Heartbreak Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's my favorite wrestler.
I'm not gonna lie, the Sweet Chin Music might be one of my favorite finishers of all time. The sound it makes when you hit with that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's
you can
my
hear
favorite
it throughout the entire
too.
Stadium. It's like
definitely. I wouldn't want to get hit by him, but
right. So, all right, so Orndorff and Roma, they start teaming, it's pretty wonderful. In the summer of 94, they defeat Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. At the Bash at the Beach, 1994. They hold on to the titles for a couple months, but then they start trading the titles with Stars and Stripes, which was Marcus Alexander and the Patriot. And I think there was like four title changes between the two of them.
And now what was the title? What was the title? Just the
WCW tag titles.
Got it.
So after after their run with Stars and Stripes had ended, or against Stars and Stripes had ended, and Stars and Stripes won the titles from Pretty Wonderful, Orndorff and Roma kind of went their separate ways. And but Orndorff and Hogan actually did have a match against each other in early 95 for the first time since 1987.
Wow.
Hogan and Savage, or Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, took on Pretty Wonderful in a match that was televised. I think it was on WCW Worldwide. And, of course, Pretty Wonderful lost. And this would actually be the only time that Orndorff and Hogan would go against each other during their WCW run.
Who do you think was the better wrestler of the two? I mean, obviously Hulk Hogan's obviously the way better and more famous one, but like without all the prestige.
If you're going on wrestling ability, it would have to be Orndorff.
Really?
Well, Hogan has never admitted that. Hogan has never said that he was a good wrestler.
He's just a really good actor, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hogan got into the wrestling business because he found it as a way to, you know, meet women. Because the girl, he was a huge fan of superstar Billy Graham, and the women love superstar Billy Graham. And Hogan was having a failed run as a guitar player in a band.
Well, yeah, so, I could see him as a guitar player.
Yeah. So then he went on to do this.
So it was almost like a fluke that Hogan became famous?
Well, yeah, well, they saw that he had a lot of charisma and all that. So that's why they capitalized on it. He got such a fan following that he was able to become popular.
Hulk Hogan's so popular that he was literally famous for like 4 decades.
Exactly.
Yep. Still popular to this day, but not as popular.
I know. I used to watch him wrestle when I was a kid. And he was still killing it. It was amazing.
All right. So Orndorff's run in WCW, him and Paul Roma quit teaming together after Roma got fired because a match he had with Alex Wright and February of 95 was so awful that somebody had to get fired for it. And they weren't going to fire Alex Wright because he was just starting with the company.
Right.
So was the match that terrible?
From what I've heard, yeah.
Okay, because
wasn't Alex Wright in the poll too?
So Orndorff becomes a singles wrestler again. And then they put him in this awful feud for the WCW TV title with the Renegade, who is basically, he was an Ultimate Warrior ripoff.
Well, they tried to make him like the Ultimate Warrior, but it failed. You know what I mean?
Correct. So now, after, the run where he tried to get the TV title, but he couldn't get the TV title, they aired a segment after WCW Worldwide where he just lost a match to the Macho Man. And he was, he started losing faith in all his abilities. He was visited by psychic Gary Spivey, and Spivey convinced Orndorff to believe in himself and that he shouldn't forget that he was Mr. Wonderful. So then Orndorff became more arrogant, started carrying a mirror around with him, and that's actually where the theme song came along, Eric.
Okay.
That's how he got the theme song.
It's a nice song.
Yeah. So then he started having this kind of, you know, wasn't a big run, but it was kind of like a mid-card run. And then on December 11th, 1995, after defeating the Disco Inferno, he got into an argument with Brian Pillman because Pillman was talking trash about him and saying that Orndorff could never cut it as a horseman. So he comes out and he tells Flair and Anderson and Pillman, he's like, look, he goes, I never wanted to be a horseman. And then Pillman, you know, kept just egging on Orndorff. So Orndorff started beating Pillman up. So then Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, who were also members of the Horsemen, decided, you know, they weren't going to let one of their guys get beat up. So they actually attacked Orndorff and they gave him a spiked pile driver on the concrete. And then that basically ended Orndorff's career. And basically the reason why they did it is because he had to retire after all the injuries he suffered in the WWF, because the entire right side of his body began to atrophy.
Wow.
Jeez.
So, you know, he had to retire.
Is that, and now that's how they usually retire people? They usually send them out in a big match like that, huh?
You usually send them out in a big match, or they do a thing to where they're going to, you know, they write them off, you know, with like a career-threatening injury or something like that. Nowadays, like, guys, they'll just stop using guys on TV, and that's how you'll know that they're retired or not.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They only really put on big shows for, like the real popular guys. Everybody else just kind of fades away, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, go ahead, Eric.
I was going to ask, Could Paul carry a company? Would he have been, if it wasn't for Hogan, could he have been like Hogan?
Probably. He was better as a heel than he was as a babyface.
Okay.
So he was a heel most of his career?
Correct.
And he never won a world title, right?
Also correct.
How many years did he wrestle?
He was about 19 years.
Wow.
And they didn't give him the title?
No.
So
I mean, he won like regional titles and stuff, but he was never like a WWF champion or a WCW champion.
Well, I got a question.
Sure, go ahead, Stevie.
How come the WWF never put a belt on him?
They just—they never really saw a reason to.
Was Vince McMahon still the owner at this point, or was he not the owner yet?
No, when Orndorff came in, Vince was the owner.
Okay.
So, one other thing I kind of wanted to get to here, because this is something that, I mean, a lot of people have kind of talked about it. I mean, you hear it on podcasts all the time if, like, they're talking about either Orndorff or, you know, Vader. But in September, in early September of 1995, may have actually even been late August, at a WCW TV taping, Paul Orndorff was still wrestling at the time, but he also was a agent / producer. So, you know, rumor has it is that Vader had just kind of gotten to the building and because he was, or he got to the building late because he was told he had to go do a photo shoot. So he goes, he does the photo shoot, comes in, and he gets told by Orndorff, hey, I need you for promos. And
right.
He's like, well, I'll be there in a minute. And, I mean, depending on which side of the story you believe, because I've heard certain people tell, you know, or tell the side of the story where it's like Orndorff was kind of bullying Vader, but then there was another side of the story where it's, you know, Orndorff was trying to get Vader to move, and Vader just basically told him, you know, F off. So Vader finally comes along to go do the promos, and Orndorff goes, what took you so long? Anyway, after they started shouting at each other, and then Orndorff Vader started pushing Orndorff, and then Orndorff actually hauled off and belted Vader and knocked him on his ass.
Wow.
And people make fun of Vader for this because Orndorff was wearing flip-flops at the time.
In the ring?
No, this was backstage, Eric.
Okay.
And this actually caused Eric Bischoff to fire Vader.
Wow.
We lost John.
So that made the move for Vader to go to the WWE after that.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your favorite match of Orndorff?
I'd have to say it's probably the, it's either going to be the Clash match against Arn Anderson or the cage match against Hogan.
Okay. Who was he the closest with in the wrestling
division? I know him and Piper were close for a while. You know, they kind of rode together. Him and Bobby Heenan always got along. I know that.
Was he close with anybody within the Heenan family?
Within the Heenan family? I'm not sure. So,
what up?
All right, anybody else have any other questions? I know for some reason we lost John.
Oh.
No, I have no questions. I mean,
I'm trying to.
Trying to what?
I was trying to think of a question. Let's see. You said your favorite match was with either Hogan or...
Either the cage match against Hogan or the Clash match against Arn Anderson.
What was his biggest accomplishment in the business?
I'd say probably the fact that he got to work with Hogan.
Pretty huge accomplishment. He won the tag team titles, but he never won any world titles. And
yeah,
he won a television
title? He never won any titles in the WWF.
What would you say his, where he was best at? What territory or company?
It's kind of hard to argue with all the money he made in the WWF. But if you're talking success, like title-wise, it would probably be WCW.
Okay.
But you can argue with all the money he made working for Vince.
Yeah.
So he had a better career in WCW.
Title-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
And matches-wise, too, right?
Yeah, because a lot of those matches with Hogan were actually really good.
Would you say that was probably Hogan's one of Hogan's best feuds?
I would actually say that Hogan's best feud was probably against the Macho Man.
Yeah. Let's see. And he was very popular, Hondo, right? Obviously, because he won the poll.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it came down to him and Kevin Sullivan.
Which is interesting. That would have been an interesting one, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What else? Did he have any family in the business, or was it just him?
I believe his brother, Terry, was also in the business for a little while.
Dad or uncles or?
No. Just him and his brother.
Was he a wrestling fan growing up?
I think he was more of a football fan. It's just also wrestling was kind of like a backup plan.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Well, do you have anything more that you could talk about? Or
not really.
Yeah, I can't think of any more questions.
What happened to John, Eric? Do you know?
Oh, he's driving, so he had to mute himself.
Oh, okay. He didn't just mute himself. He actually took himself off the fucking. He took himself off the line.
Oh. He said he muted himself. But,
yeah, he dropped completely.
Okay. He must have hung up by accident. Anyway, I mean, if you guys have nothing else, I don't have anything.
I have no other questions.
Yeah, I mean, we've
thank
pretty
you,
much,
Professor, no?
Pretty much. I mean, there's probably a lot more to get into, but... you know, we can always save that for another day because I'm sure we're going to do different events that he's going to be on.
Exactly. And we don't want to talk about everything when we could save that for another show.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, he is definitely, like, one of the better heels out there. And I will say this, when we do the countdown... when we do our countdown of the top 10 greatest superstars to never be WWE champion, there is a good chance he's going to be on it. Or he's going to...
Oh, I would.
Obviously, we're each going to have our own list, but we'll also have the fan vote.
Yep. And I guarantee he'll be on that.
He's either going to be on all of our lists or he's going to be on somebody's list. I'm sure.
I'm pretty sure the fan vote.
More than likely, yeah.
And that episode's coming up soon, right? Yeah.
July 16th, yes.
Well, thank you, Professor Doug.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Yep.
So, all right. We will be back next week with the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We'll talk about the Great American Bash 1996. Probably best remembered for the fact that Steve Mongo McMichael and Kevin Green took on Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. And what was a very memorable match. Also, the Giant defended the WCW title against Lex Luger. The first also WCW appearance of Rey Mysterio Jr., by the way.
Oh, wow.
So there's going to be
Young Rey.
Huh?
What's that? Young Rey.
Yeah. So it's going to be a lot to get into.
It's going to be a fun show.
Yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Also, remember, no shows at all tomorrow. Sunday, Mindy will be along for Scaredy Cats, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's pretty much it.
Yep. We'll be back next Friday.
Yep. So, all right. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Stevie.
You're welcome.
And John, thank you for being part of the show.
Yep.
Kenny,
thank you for being
cool.
Good. Thank you for bringing a good professor, as always.
You're very welcome. And we'll talk to everybody later.
Later.
Later.